Penguin Random House Audio presents The Songs of Trees, Stories from Nature's Great Connectors by David George Haskell. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell, with the preface and interludes read by the author.
Preface. For the Homeric Greeks, kleos, fame, was made of song. Vibrations in air contained the measure and memory of a person's life. To listen was therefore to learn what endures. I turned my ear to trees, seeking ecological kleos. I found no heroes, no individuals around whom history pivots. Instead, living memories of trees, manifest in their songs, tell of life's community, a net of relations. We humans belong within this conversation as blood kin and incarnate members. To listen is therefore to hear our voices and those of our family. Each chapter of this book attends to the song of a particular tree, the physicality of sound, the stories that brought sound into being, and our own bodily, emotional, and intellectual responses. Much of this song dwells under the acoustic surface. To listen is therefore to touch a stethoscope to the skin of a landscape to hear what stirs below. I sought trees in places whose natures seemed quite different. The first chapters of the book comprise stories of trees that seem to live apart from humans. Yet, these trees' lives and ours, past and future, are twined. Some of these connections are as ancient as life itself. Others are industrial reimaginings of older themes. I then turn to the exhumed remains of trees that have been long dead. Fossils and charcoal. These ancients show the arc of biological and geologic stories and attest, perhaps, to the future. The third group of chapters concerns trees that live in cities and fields. Humans appear to dominate. Nature seems absent or in abeyance. Yet, wild biological relationships permeate every being. In all these places, tree songs emerge from relationship. Although tree trunks seemingly stand as detached individuals, their lives subvert this atomistic view. We're all trees, humans, insects, birds, bacteria, pluralities. Life is embodied network. These living networks are not places of omnibenevolent oneness. Instead, they are where ecological and evolutionary tensions between cooperation and conflict are negotiated and resolved. These struggles often result not in the evolution of stronger, more disconnected selves, but in the dissolution of the self into relationship. Because life is network, there is no nature or environment separate and apart from humans. We are part of the community of life, composed of relationships with others. So the human nature duality that lives near the heart of many philosophies is, from a biological perspective, illusory. We are not, in the words of the folk hymn, wayfaring strangers traveling through this world, nor are we the estranged creatures of Wordsworth's lyrical ballads, fallen out of nature into a stagnant pool of artifice where we misshape the beauteous forms of things. Our bodies and minds, our science and art, are as natural and wild as they ever were. We cannot step outside life's songs. This music made us. It is our nature. Our ethic must therefore be one of belonging, an imperative made all the more urgent by the many ways that human actions are fraying, rewiring, and severing biological networks worldwide. To listen to trees, nature's great connectors, is therefore to learn how to inhabit the relationships that give life its source, substance, and beauty.
Part 1. Ceiba, near the Tiputini River, Ecuador. 0 degrees, 38 minutes, 10.2 seconds south. 76 degrees, 8 minutes, 39.5 seconds west. Moss has taken flight, lifting itself on wings so thin that light barely notices as it passes through. The sun leaves not a color, but a suggestion. Leaflets spread, and the moss plants soar on long strands. A fibrous anchor tethers each flyer to the swarm of fungi and algae that coats every tree branch. Unlike their crouched and bowed relatives in the rest of the world, these mosses live where water has no skin, no boundary. Here, the air is water. Mosses grow like filamentous seaweeds in an open ocean. The forest presses its mouth to every creature and exhales. We draw the breath, hot, odorous, almost mammalian, seeming to flow directly from the forest's blood to our lungs. Animate, intimate, suffocating. At noon, the mosses are in flight, but we humans are supine, curled in the fecund belly of life's modern zenith. We're near the center of the Yasuni Biosphere Reserve in western Ecuador. Around us grows 16,000 square kilometers of Amazonian forest in a national park, an ethnic reserve and a buffer zone, connected across the Colombian and Peruvian borders to more forest that, seen through the lofty gaze of satellites, forms one of the largest green spots on the face of the earth. Rain. Every few hours, rain, speaking a language unique to this forest. Amazonian rain differs not just in the volume of what it has to tell. 3.5 meters dropped every year, 6 times Grey London's count. But in its vocabulary and syntax. Invisible spores and plant chemicals mist the air above the forest canopy. These aerosols are the seeds onto which water vapor coalesces, then swells. Every teaspoon of air here has 1,000 or more of these particles, a haze 10 times less dense than air away from the Amazon. Wherever people aggregate in significant numbers, we loose to the sky billions of particles from engines and chimneys. Like birds in a dust bath, the vigorous flapping of our industrial lives raises a fog. Each fleck of pollution, dusty mote of soil or spore from a woodland, is a potential raindrop. The Amazon forest is vast, and over much of its extent, the air is mostly a product of the forest, not the activities of industrious birds. Winds sometimes bring pulses of dust from Africa or smog from a city. But mostly, the Amazon speaks its own tongue. With fewer seeds and abundant water vapor, raindrops bloat to exceptional sizes. The rain falls in big syllables, phonemes unlike...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?